Case is submitted. We'll hear argument next in number 86622, Trainer against Turnage, number 86737, McKelvey against Turnage. Mr. Teal, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. These cases today raise two issues for your consideration. The primary issue is not, as the government suggests in its brief, the medical question of whether alcoholism is a disease. That issue has been decided by the Congress, which has determined that alcoholism is a handicap and that it is an illness, a finding that is conclusively supported by the American Medical Association, the American Psychiatric Association, and the National Council on Alcoholism, all of which have filed briefs in support of petitioners in this case. Instead, the question here is whether the Veterans Administration can ignore Congress's determination and enforce a regulation that defines alcoholism to be willful misconduct, which regulation is applied to bar alcoholic veterans from obtaining extensions of the time in which to use their VA educational benefits. We contend that the VA cannot use such a regulation because it is impermissibly discriminatory under Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. Before reaching that issue, however, there is a threshold question of the jurisdiction of the federal courts even to consider the legality of the willful misconduct regulation. Section 211A of the Veterans Benefits Statutes precludes review of certain VA decisions. The government argues for a sweeping interpretation of Section 211A, one that would bar review of all VA action except constitutional challenges to VA statutes and challenges by persons not themselves in a position to receive Veterans Administration benefits, but who are affected by VA action. Petitioners argue that Section 211A should be read slightly more narrowly, and that, at a minimum, review of VA regulations to determine whether they comply with non-VA statutes is permitted.
Is that because of the text, Mr. Teal, that you say that review of regs to see if they comply with non-VA statutes?
It is because of the text and because of the legislative history and the statutory scheme for review that we believe Congress created here, which I will explain in just a moment. The petitioners here are both honorably discharged veterans. They each have a family history of alcoholism, and each of them began drinking while they were children. Mr. Trainer at age 8, Mr. McKelvey at age 13. After they left the service, they were both disabled by alcoholism for a period of 6 to 8 years. Before 1977, veterans were required to use their VA educational benefits within a period of 10 years following their separation from the service. In 1977, the Educational Benefits Statute was amended by the Congress to allow extensions of the delimiting date, the 10-year period, to veterans who had been unable to use those benefits within the 10-year period because of a disability that was not the result of their own willful misconduct. Both petitioners here applied for an extension of the time in which to use their benefits. Both were denied that extension in decisions of the Board of Veterans Appeals, in which the Board of Veterans Appeals stated explicitly the extensions were being denied on the basis of the willful misconduct regulation at issue here. Thereafter, both petitioners brought suit. Both prevailed on summary judgment in the district courts. In the courts of appeals, Mr. Trainer lost on the jurisdictional issue in the Second Circuit. Mr. McKelvey lost on the merits question in the District of Columbia Circuit. We believe that both courts were in error on the issues in which they ruled against petitioners. I'd like to begin with the jurisdictional issue. It is difficult to imagine a less attractive circumstance for a federal agency to argue that review is precluded. In this case, the Veterans Administration refused to decide the issue here, whether this regulation violated the Rehabilitation Act. Even though it would not decide the question, it contends that the courts cannot decide the question either. Finally, at the same time it is making these arguments to the courts, it has repeatedly, during this decade, told the Congress, in response to questions and in testimony, that review of VA regulations is in fact permitted under Section 211A. As with any case involving the question of bars to judicial review, we begin here with a strong presumption that there is judicial review, which can be overcome by a clear and convincing showing that Congress did not intend such review. In Block v. Community Nutrition Institute in 1984, this court enunciated a number of factors that should be considered in deciding whether review is precluded. The first of these is the language of the statute. Others are the structure of the statutory scheme and the legislative history. Let me address those three elements. First, with respect to the language of Section 211A, it is not as sweeping as the government suggests. The specific language at issue here is whether decisions of the administrator on any question of law or fact under any law administered by the VA providing benefits to veterans is barred from review. Now, certainly the Congress could have drafted a statute far more clearly had they intended to entirely preclude review of everything affecting the VA. They simply could have said, nothing the VA does can be challenged in court. That's not what we have here. We have a statute here with a number of specific clauses that must be interpreted. First, there is a requirement in the statute that the decision be on a question of law or fact arising under any statute administered by the Veterans Administration. Judge Kearse noted in her dissent in Traynor in the Second Circuit that not only was the Rehabilitation Act not administered by the VA, there's a distinction there between administering and complying with a statute. Presumably, all federal agencies comply with federal statutes of broad scope that affect it. Administering a statute, we believe, indicates some expertise. Here, the President, by executive order, has delegated the administration of Section 504 to the Justice Department. This Court recognized in its decision in 1986 in Bowen v. American Hospital Association that a number of agencies have issued regulations under Section 504 and that those agencies do not have any particular expertise, so there is no reason to give deference to those agencies' views with respect to Section 504. The reason we believe that is relevant is that it is some indication that those agencies do not administer the statute, they merely comply with a statute. Secondly, there is a requirement that the statute provide benefits to veterans. Again, the Rehabilitation Act does not do that. What we have with the Rehabilitation Act is a limitation on the power of federal agencies to discriminate against handicapped persons on the basis of their handicap. Now, the structure and the legislative history are essential to understanding the scope of Section 211A. It is our position that the Congress crafted a rational scheme for review of VA actions. Certain actions are subject to review in the Board of Veterans Appeals. Section 4004A of the Veterans Statutes establishes the jurisdiction of the Board of Veterans Appeals. It makes clear in Section 4004C that the Board of Veterans Appeals does not have the authority to review regulations of the Veterans Administration. It is bound by those regulations. That, as petitioners discovered here in their administrative hearings in this case, is a restriction taken quite seriously by the Board of Veterans Appeals. The Board of Veterans Appeals in both cases here stated that it was powerless to review regulations of the Veterans Administration. It was bound by those regulations. With this view, a decision by this court basically is left with two alternatives. One is to make a decision that, nevertheless, despite the view of the Board of Veterans Appeals, there is no review available here. The effect of that is that the Veterans Administration could pick and choose among those federal statutes which it wanted to pay attention to. It could decide not to bother with the Rehabilitation Act. It could decide not to bother with the Civil Rights Act. And presumably, under the government's interpretation of Section 211A, the Veterans Administration could do so with impunity. We believe that that is not supported by the language of the statute, and that the more rational interpretation of Section 211A is that while decisions of the Veterans Administration within the specific facts of a veteran's case under veterans' laws as to whether a particular veteran is entitled to benefits is consigned to the Board of Veterans' Appeals, but that challenges to regulations under non-Veterans Administration statutes may be reviewed in the federal courts.
How about challenges to regulations under VA statutes?
Our position is that regulations generally are reviewable because of the distinction between decisions and regulations that we believe is in Section 4004. I would note that we believe this is not that case.
Says there are just thousands and thousands of regulations that if you say any decision based on a regulation is reviewable, that there are just going to be all sorts of cases coming into the courts.
Well, I know they say that, and I think the experience...
Do you have reason to doubt it? If we were to say that VA statute regulations as well as non-VA statute regulations were reviewable?
I think there is quite a lot of reason to doubt it. Within the last decade, four federal courts have allowed review of regulations, challenges to regulations that they were in excess of statutory authority, that kind of challenge. There simply has not been that flood of litigation which you would expect if the government's position were correct here.
And these were allowing review of statute of regulations based on VA statute?
Yes. The other point to note here is that we believe our interpretation here is supported by the Veterans Administration. It's only in this case they seem to be arguing something differently. They have repeatedly expressed the view to the Congress that review in these circumstances is permitted. In 1952, they explained to the Congress that they believe Section 211A barred review of determinations arising in the facts of particular veterans' cases under particular veterans' law, and they gave as example rating decisions, degrees of disability, that kind of thing. No mention of regulations. More recently, the Veterans Administration has been questioned repeatedly since 1980 on this issue by the Congress and has stated that in their view, regulations of the Veterans Administration are subject to review. Indeed, what is particularly striking is they most recently said that in response to a letter from Senator Cranston in 1986, which was after the decisions of these courts in the courts of appeals.
But, Mr. Till, here we have the Veterans Administration appearing formally before us by the Solicitor General, and he's saying this is what the Veterans Administration, this is their position. Now, we ordinarily accept that. You may argue that it has not been consistently applied in the past, but we ordinarily take the Solicitor General's word for what the VA's position is.
I'm not disputing that, Your Honor.
You say the Veterans Administration itself believes the way you do. If it did, obviously, there wouldn't be any lawsuit.
Well, I would think so myself, but that doesn't seem to be what we have here. The statutes, the legislative support we have cited in our brief, quite clearly they have taken a different view for Congress. Now, they're no doubt here arguing a different position, but that shouldn't control.
You say legislative support, and you've cited statements made, or you think were made, or probably were, by VA people to the Congress. But that isn't legislative support. That may be an inconsistent position by the agency.
No, I agree with you. It is not legislative history in the sense that this
in
court often refers to it.
Sense.
Pardon me?
In any orthodox.
That's correct. But this court has noted repeatedly, and we cite cases to support this view, that the view of an agency with respect to statutes that govern it is entitled to some deference. That's the reason we think that the arguments, the statements made by the Veterans Administration to the Congress are significant.
Yes, but this statutory provision doesn't really have much to do with the agency, with what the agency does. It describes what courts may do.
Nevertheless, I think the agency lives day to day with this statute. They presumably know what they do is not subject to review, and they better get it right. Here their view seems to be, other than in this case, that they think 211A does not reach regulations. We think that view is entitled to some deference, certainly consideration by this Court in resolving these issues. We think it's an indication the Veterans Administration recognizes that the statutory scheme for review that I've suggested was created by 211A is, in fact, the proper one. I'd like to now turn, if I could, to the Rehabilitation Act issue before the Court. Our argument is a simple one. We contend that because alcoholism has been defined as a handicap under the Rehabilitation Act, and because Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act applies to the VA Educational Benefits Program, the regulation here at issue is impermissibly discriminatory and cannot stand.
I guess under your view, disability payments would have to be made as well, wouldn't they?
Well, it is a troubling aspect of this case, as the government points out, that the VA uses the same term willful misconduct in its disability statutes as it does in these educational benefits statutes. The fact is, however, we believe that the choice for the Court is to write these petitioners out of the Rehabilitation Act, or to by saying that you don't get your benefits, or to worry about the question of disability benefits, which if that resulted in a problem, the Congress could correct that problem. There's ample room
for...
Well,
it would be pretty hard to distinguish legally, wouldn't it?
Well, under the current statutes, it is. But I might note, for instance, under the Rehabilitation Act, under the definitions of what's a handicapped person, with respect to employment benefits, the Congress has made just that kind of distinction, that persons who are currently alcoholics or currently drug abusers are not covered with respect to employment opportunities if their problems would prevent them from being able to do their job. There is that kind of precedent that the Congress has made those small corrections when necessary. Presumably, it could do the same thing here. Last term, in our line, this Court noted that discrimination against the handicapped often results from insensitivity. We believe this is not such a case. The regulation here is discriminatory by intent. The VA knows about the problems of alcoholism. Its hospitals may be the federal government's largest provider of treatment services to alcoholics, and it significantly does not make any distinction on the basis of willful misconduct in treating those patients. Despite that, it continues to enforce a regulation that we believe is based on nothing more than the history of the regulation. The regulation comes from the era of prohibition. It has never been reconsidered in light of current medical knowledge, despite the united opposition of the leading medical groups in this country, including the AMA and the American Psychiatric Association. It truly is reflective, to use the phrase used in our line, of archaic attitudes and laws, and we believe cannot be allowed to stand. Previous judicial decisions under Section 504 have created a four-part analysis for determining whether the Section 504 has been violated. First question is, are the petitioners handicapped? The answer here obviously is yes. This Court recognized in our line that alcoholics are covered by the language of the Rehabilitation Act. Are they otherwise qualified? Again, the facts in this case indicate the answer must be yes. Both petitioners here received education after they recovered from their alcoholism. The government has not disputed that point. Third point, are these programs covered by Section 504? Again, the answer is yes. The government concedes that. The fourth point, have these petitioners been excluded solely on the basis of handicap? Here, the Board of Veterans Appeals said, we've got this regulation that says, if you're an alcoholic, we can't give you an extension. Therefore, that's the end of the case.
You feel that's an irrebuttable presumption?
Yes. Now, I want to address a point that the Court of Appeals in McKelvey made, because they had some problem with the notion that this was exclusion on the basis of handicap. The majority there said that this was not discrimination on the basis of handicap, but rather on the basis of conduct. We believe that is a distinction that does not make sense. The key feature of alcoholism is the compulsion to drink. There may be other points about it, but what characterizes the illness in its active phase is drinking behavior. We believe the two must be taken part and parcel, at least with respect to this kind of regulation. Here, the regulation was not regulating behavior. It was simply saying, if you're an alcoholic, you don't get your benefits. That is a decision made not on the basis of any conduct, but on the decision on the basis of the petitioner's status as alcoholics. In Arline, this court noted that the contagious effects of tuberculosis cannot meaningfully be distinguished from the disease itself. We believe here you have essentially the same kind of problem. You can't separate the drinking behavior from alcoholism. To do so would write alcoholics entirely out of the protection of the Rehabilitation Act. We believe that any federal agency could say, well, we understand you're an alcoholic, and we're not saying anything about that. We're just regulating on the basis of your conduct.
Mr. Thiel, I'd like to go back, because your argument, I think, raises the point to the question Justice O'Connor asked you earlier. Does your argument also require the same treatment of claims for disability benefits by a veteran? And I particularly am concerned about the legislative history in 1977, in which the Senate suggested that in determining the whether the disability was the result of willful misconduct, they wanted to apply the same standard that was being applied by the VA under this regulation.
I think the answer to the question is yes. The VA applies the same willful misconduct standard in the context of disability benefits as well as these educational benefits.
Your arguments against doing so in the tolling context seem to me to apply equally to the disability benefit claim context.
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
You're explaining why they should not do it in the context of tolling the 10-year prohibition. But doesn't your argument also apply equally to a claim by a veteran for disability benefits based on his alcoholism?
I think it well might. Yes, sir.
So you don't really buy Judge Ginsburg's distinction of the two. You say then that whatever we decide today actually will decide the issue on disability benefits.
Well, I think it's as Justice O'Connor notes, it's a tough distinction to make. There are suggestions that the VA might be able, for instance, to determine that if somebody's not receiving treatment, they know they have the problem of alcoholism and they're not receiving treatment, that perhaps that alone is a sufficient basis to distinguish, to call willful misconduct in the disability benefit context. That is a bit far afield from this case. We don't have that problem because here we've got petitioners who are recovered from the problem of alcoholism. It's conceivable the VA might try to make those distinctions. But nevertheless, we recognize there is the same language in the statutes, and that if the Congress perceives that to be a problem as a result of a decision for petitioners in this case, they may have to
not only the same language in the statute and the regulation, but also legislative history, suggesting that at least in 1977, Congress intended the two rules to be the same.
Well, that's right. And in fact, I'd like to mention that legislative history. In our view, the government makes much of the point that reference in 77 to these regulations. We think that the most that can be made out of that is that Congress felt the same standards should be applied across the board. That's a rational thing for an agency to do. If you got the same language, apply the same meaning to it.
Isn't this tough enough for us to take it one step at a time?
Well, in fact, I think it is that it's very difficult, and I think this Court's decision, for instance, in Choate, where you decided some things, we reach some disparate impact under Section 504, we may not reach at all, has shown a willingness to take things one at a time. You could have a narrow decision such as that in this case. The other, pardon me.
If there had been no Rehabilitation Act, the Veterans Administration would withstand challenge, its interpretation and application to alcoholics of this tolling provision. Without the Rehabilitation Act, Section 504, you would not have a case, I take it.
Well, I think we would have a much more difficult case.
That's your principal reliance.
Yes, we are principally relying on Section 504.
So here's an act that was being administered that it was supposed to be administered, and then came the Rehabilitation Act, and you say there's a fundamental inconsistency between the two statutes.
No, actually, that's what the government argues. The government argues there is a fundamental inconsistency. We don't argue that for a
what
minute.
Do you argue?
Well, our point is that the inconsistency
But you say that that Rehabilitation Act requires the Veterans Administration to change its views.
its views as expressed in a regulation. We do not contend that they could not then take petitioners' cases and decide and direct them back.
I take it you think that the I thought that you answered that the Veterans Administration position in its regulation would be perfectly acceptable absent the Rehabilitation Act.
No, what I said was I think it would be a tougher case. You said, do we principally rely on Section 504? And we do. I think there would still be an argument.
Assume for the moment the regulation was quite valid absent the Rehabilitation Act, and hence the regulation is a valid regulation under the applicable statutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that expresses the meaning of the statute, or a permissible meaning of the statute.
I concede it would be more difficult to challenge that.
Well, let's assume that it was a permissible interpretation of the statute. Now, you, in effect, say that the Rehabilitation Act made it an impermissible construction of the statute.
That's right, but that does not have the effect, as the government suggests, of repealing the 77 statute. What it does is mean they can't enforce this particular regulation. There is no inconsistency.
Well, the reason they can't is because of it is no longer a permissible interpretation of the veteran statutes.
Well, it is no longer permissible with these statutes, with the Rehabilitation Act, to define a condition that's handicapping condition under the Rehab Act.
Yeah, but you're arguing that the Rehabilitation Act means that the veterans, the laws governing the Veterans Administration can no longer be construed the way the Veterans Administration has been construing them.
If you assume the as is correct, the regulation implements that statute, I will concede that point. But there is no inherent contradiction between the two statutes, we believe. You can still have a determination on these petitioners of whether there was something in particular in their behavior that constituted willful misconduct.
The Rehabilitation Act means that there is no longer any room to construe the laws the Veterans Administration is administering in the way that they have been construed.
Make a blanket determination that alcoholics have engaged in willful misconduct. We believe that's inconsistent with the Rehabilitation Act.
Even though absent it was quite consistent with the Veterans Administration's laws.
Well, actually, I'm not so sure it is inconsistent with the Veterans Administration laws. The Veterans Administration laws, this Court has noted in previous opinions, the radiation case back in 85, are typically slanted in favor of the veteran. This is something that, while maybe as a legal matter, absent the Rehabilitation Act, would be consistent with veterans' laws, I'm not sure that somebody couldn't challenge it on that basis.
In light of the Senate history in 1977?
Well, again, the government, I believe, places too much reliance on that history. I think the most that history stands for is that the same concept should be applied in the same circumstances. There was no, applied in the same way. Willful misconduct means the same thing in all contexts. There was no decision, no discussion in that legislative history of what the regulation meant, and there was certainly no consideration of it in light of the Rehabilitation Act, which did not apply in 78 to this program. I'd like to reserve my remaining time.
Thank you, Mr. Thiel. We'll hear now from you, Mr. Gansfried.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. Congress has spoken plainly and directly on the two questions that are at issue in these cases, one jurisdictional, the other substantive. First, did Congress intend to preclude judicial review in these cases? The answer is yes. And second, did Congress intend for the GI Bill to be administered just as the VA has administered it here? And the answer, again, is yes. The common theme in both issues is ultimately the principle that congressional intent must govern. The statute barring judicial review, Section 211A, precludes review of decisions of the administrator on any question of fact or law under any law administered by the VA providing benefits. The intent of this language couldn't be clearer. In fact,
you're going to explain how the Rehab Act is administered by the Veterans Administration.
I'm going to explain how what's being challenged in this case is a decision by the administrator under a law administered by the VA. Namely, the decision was to deny the particular extension in the educational benefits program to the petitioners. I would also point out that to the extent that the petitioners are suggesting that the Rehabilitation Act has required some modification of the veterans' benefits law, They're arguing that the Rehabilitation Act has been integrated into that statute, and of course it's the head of the agency who has been given the responsibility by Congress of implementing the Rehabilitation Act within his agency's programs. There's a reference to the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice has coordinating responsibilities, but to the extent that the administrator has to make a decision in a benefits case that subsumes questions raised under other statutes, he's still deciding a question under the VA benefits laws.
Mr. Gansfried, I want to be sure, as long as the 10 years has not expired, the veteran is entitled to this assistance, isn't
it? That's correct.
Even though he's an alcoholic?
That's correct.
And all you're doing is denying him the necessary time to get the full benefit.
He is not in a position any different from anyone else who was not handicapped. He had reasonable access to the package of benefits, the educational benefits program. He had the 10 years. All that has been denied is the extension that Congress provided in 1977 for certain handicapped people. And they defined the handicapped people to whom that extension would be available and defined it in a way that did not include the petitioners within that category. I should make clear that the VA regulation does not disqualify alcoholics from benefits. And as I think your question implied, had they applied during the 10-year period, and in fact both of them did, and did receive educational benefits during their applicable 10-year delimiting periods, and they got them. There was no disqualification on account of alcoholism. It just becomes a relevant consideration in connection with this limited 10-year extension that Congress has provided, extension of the 10-year period that Congress has provided for certain handicapped people.
Well, I take it you imply that their delay in completing their education was due to the continuing disability due to alcoholism.
What I mean to say is that as the Board of Veterans' Appeals determined in this case, they did not meet any of the statutory or VA regulatory criteria for qualifying for the extension.
Isn't it somewhat unrealistic? You say they could have had the benefits, but aren't we assuming that during the period of their alcoholism they really were not fit to be students in a higher education institution?
Well, we're not assuming that, because had they suffered consequential physical disability, consequential physical effects of the alcoholism that themselves would have qualified as a disability, they would have gotten the benefits.
Yes, but I still doesn't the alcoholism itself, assuming it's serious enough, would not that prevent a person from passing college grade courses?
It could, but it would be the physical, derivative physical effects of the alcoholism. And the determination in these cases by the board was that the physical effects that were on which the petitioners relied did not satisfy to meet other regulatory requirements as to how severe a disability you have to show to get your benefits.
I really don't understand your argument.
Okay. The regulation...
I mean, the physical effect is just that the person is consuming so much alcohol that he or she is unable to live a normal life.
Well,
are you saying there's going to be something to get an automobile accident?
We take issue with one statement there. The physical effect is consuming too much alcohol. Our position that consuming too much alcohol is conduct, not a physical effect. If the veteran has derivative physical effects,
yes, but
that are themselves disabling,
that conduct itself is sufficient to prevent the person from acquiring an education, isn't it? I thought
only if he has the consequential physical disabilities. There may be, as the
I mean, maybe
evidence
your
in the
interpretation
cases,
of the regulation, it doesn't count, but just as a practical matter of whether he was otherwise qualified, if he is consuming large quantities of alcohol 24 hours a day, 6 days a week, and there's nothing else, he doesn't break his leg in an accident or anything like that, no other conduct, but isn't that itself something that, as a practical matter, makes it rather unrealistic to suggest he should be taking advantage of this?
Well, what I have to understand in the question is, are there any physical consequences of his consuming?
He's drunk all the time.
Well, in that case, if he's consuming alcohol 24 hours a day, if he's not eating, then he's going to have nutritional deficiencies. He's going to have vitamin deficiencies, which is specified in the VA regulation as. He may have all kinds of other physical maladies and consequences of it, and if he has those, and if he proves them, he gets the benefits. And the fact that alcoholism may have been the cause is not a disqualification.
Well, is being dead drunk, so to speak, a physical consequence that would entitle him to some sort of benefits?
Being unconscious?
Yeah.
The question is whether it's a disability that would have prevented someone from pursuing an education. Being dead drunk on occasions is not does not disable someone from pursuing an educational program. The problem that the petitioners ran into before the board here was that in their various periods of hospitalization, in Mr. Traynor's case, he was hospitalized 5 times over the course of 4 years. But none of his periods of hospitalization were sufficiently long to satisfy a separate regulatory requirement that only hospitalization periods of 30 days would permit someone to get an extension of benefits because...
been hospitalized for 30 days because of alcoholism, then he would have gotten credit for that 30 days in the tolling?
He may have if there was, depending on how the board looked at what evidence he presented. But if he came, ordinarily the hospital records are not going to say simply hospitalized 30 days, alcoholism. They're going to indicate alcoholism, and because as the brief suggests, is a very important part of alcoholism.
Really,
and that is denial. The fact is the person is not likely to be in the hospital in the first place unless there is some physical manifestation.
But this rule doesn't say anything about physical manifestations or anything else about being drunk or anything. It says if you're an alcoholic, that's all.
No, it does not say that.
What does it say?
The VA rule is that alcoholism is divided into two categories, primary alcoholism and secondary.
Right.
Secondary alcoholism, which is the result of an underlying psychiatric disorder, is not not a disqualification. You get the extension of benefits.
That has nothing to do with how much liquor he drinks or anything else.
Well, whether someone's an alcoholic doesn't always depend on how much liquor he drinks.
That's what I'm talking about. That's exactly what I'm complaining about.
There are people who may drink as much as someone who is an alcoholic, and yet those people are not alcoholics. There are alcoholics who may be functioning alcoholics. There are alcoholics who may have binges or weekend drinking, and yet are able to function at school and at work 5 days a week.
I guess he couldn't teach either, could he? If he's an alcoholic, he couldn't teach, could he?
An active alcoholic, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week?
Yeah.
And showing the physical manifestation
of
that? I suppose not.
That's right. But you pick on this one group.
No, it's only a group of people who can prove sick. Neither.
Have you admitted that this is an illness?
That alcoholism is an illness? We submit that it's basically an irrelevant question in this context for reasons very similar to the reasons stated in the opinion of Powell versus Texas.
An irrelevant question.
I.
Do you agree that it is an illness?
It can be. It can be.
Do you agree that the average alcoholism, in quotes, is an illness?
Well, we don't know what the average alcoholism is. We have the source decided to us.
The one that you're talking about in your statute.
Primary alcoholism?
Yes, sir.
Okay. What is defined in the regulation?
Is that an illness?
It can be. It is not always.
It's in your statute. You put it in there.
Well, it's in the regulation, and the term primary alcoholism is essentially what the VA is determined to be willful alcoholism.
Is it an illness?
It can be. Is it in every case?
If it's not an illness, what else is it?
It can be conduct. It can be a compulsion short of an illness. It can be an inclination short of a compulsion.
Is that what they're talking about?
It can be a predisposition. Well, we don't know.
Oh, you mean the statute indefinite?
The statute simply says disability, not the result of willful misconduct.
And the regulations are indefinite? But they're not too indefinite to take away a man's livelihood.
I'm not talking about the question of taking away anyone's livelihood.
Well, I'm asking, is it an illness or not?
You raise it in terms of someone's livelihood. Congress has said in the Rehabilitation Act that an alcoholic who is not able to perform employment duties is not a handicapped person. That's in the statute, in the Rehabilitation
Act. I'm talking about this statute, which says alcoholism.
Well, this statute doesn't say alcoholism. This statute
says primary.
No, it's the regulation and the
regulation.
It says primary alcoholism.
Well, is that regulation an illness when it says alcoholism in the regulation?
It doesn't address the question whether it's an illness.
Well, does it say alcoholism?
It says what?
Primary alcoholism.
Primary alcoholism.
Is that or not? I'm going to try this one time, and then I'm through.
Okay.
Is it not an illness?
The regulation doesn't say.
Well, is it or is it not? Is it administered as or is it not?
In terms of providing rehabilitation and treatment, the answer to that is for the Veterans Administration is yes, and it provides $100 million in inpatient rehabilitation alcoholism services each year. And it, for rehabilitation, it regards it as an illness.
It will help
people overcome the condition.
It is an illness.
In some contexts, it is.
It took quite a while, but I made it.
Mr. Gansfried, let me try to bring this down to earth. I take it that the issue, much proclaimed by the media, as to whether alcoholism is or is not a disease is not really very relevant in this case, is it?
No, because an illness is not necessarily a disability. I guess I've gotten a bit afield from the question of Section 211A, but I think the colloquy points out that we are dealing here with very complex questions that touch on very intricate ganglion of nerves in society that cuts across questions of medicine and law and philosophy and religion. The case doesn't have to be decided on that level, but the issues do implicate all of those concerns. The basis for deciding the case is really determining Congress's intent in two statutes, 211A, in which it said no review, because it didn't want the courts to get involved in day-to-day determinations of VA policy and VA benefits. And it's clear that that's exactly what is really involved in these cases. It's clear from the prayers for relief in the district court.
Yes, but, Mr. Gann, that's because these cases arise in that particular way. But supposing they brought declaratory judgment actions asking for a ruling on the consistency of this regulation with the Rehabilitation Act, then your language of the statute argument really wouldn't fit. It's just that it happens to arise.
Without ever first doing something like petitioning the administrator of the VA to reconsider, I mean, what's the agency action that's being challenged here? It's either the benefits determination in their cases, or it's a regulation that was promulgated in 1972 before the Rehabilitation Act was passed, 6 years before it became applicable to federal programs, and it's simply not an appropriate basis for federal jurisdiction to come into court without having gone to the head of the agency, petitioning him to reconsider his regulation.
All I'm suggesting is if you brought that kind of a lawsuit, the language of 211A would not read upon it.
It might. It might, because what might happen is that the administrator could say that this is a question whether I should interpret the benefits law to have the following consequences on the benefits law as a result of the Rehabilitation Act.
Or the VA could say, as it did here, we're just not interested in deciding that question. They did not decide it here, as I understand.
The Board of Veterans' Appeals didn't decide it here. The Board of Veterans' Appeals was deciding the particular
eligibility. Nobody should decide it. Nobody should decide it.
No.
The agency refused to enforce
this. Here, neither one of which was addressed by the petitioners. The first is a petition to the administrator. The administrator has, by issuing this as a regulation and not maintaining it as a decision, which it had been in earlier years, in 1931 and 1964, there were decisions by the administrator, individual determinations, not subject to judicial review. In 1972, the administrator put that into a regulation. And the administrator has also, although he wasn't obliged to do it under 553.
That regulation, as interpreted by the administrator, continues to comport with the law that was passed in 1978.
Yes, and the answer is you go back to the administrator, the person who promulgated the regulation, 553E of the Administrative Procedure Act, which has been incorporated here VA using
you
the notice of comment period, says you go back and you petition to the head of the agency, or you go to Congress.
No, but do you concede there would be review under the Administrative Procedure Act in such a proceeding? Notwithstanding the language...
It's altogether different from this case, and it's not a concession.
Are you
that
contending that
make.
The statute would bar such a proceeding? If you are, why are you suggesting that's the way they should have done it?
Because they could have gotten relief. There might not have been a need for a proceeding. Or, having gotten that decision for the administrator, to go in to present the medical evidence, to present whatever you'd like to present from the recent medical literature, and say, look, times have changed. The statute has changed. We think that a rethinking is in order here. The administrator has, independent of the fact that there had been no such petition for that, has looked at this question. There's legislative history that touches
that
on
that.
The administrator concluded that...
Unless you're saying that there would have been review under the Administrative Procedure Act. If you're not saying that, they could have written them a letter, too, and said, please reexamine this. They could have done a lot of things.
That's right, but they did none of them.
The question is whether the statute requires them to do those. And I still don't know what your answer is on whether there would have been review in an appropriately framed proceeding under the Administrative Procedure Act.
If ultimately what it was a decision by the administrator under a law administered by the VA, the answer to that has got to be that there would not be judicial review. Let me address the question briefly as to whether review extends only to regulations or... turn that around, whether the preclusion of review extends only to adjudications in individual cases or it applies to regulations as well. The petitioners have argued that there has been very little litigation on the subject, even though very few cases brought, even though a number of circuits have permitted judicial review of VA decisions in particular instances. The question really isn't whether we can predict whether floodgates will open and the waters will rush in. It's more important to look at what Congress was saying when it was writing the statute and whether it was concerned about floodgates. And the answer to that is yes. In 1970, when 211 was amended to its present form, as this Court discussed in its decision in Johnson versus Robeson, it was done as a reaction to decisions by the D.C. Circuit that had permitted review in certain circumstances. And the legislative history, which is discussed in Johnson versus Robeson, and is also discussed in then-Judge Scalia's opinion in the case of Gott versus Walters, indicates that there was concern that there were 353 cases pending in the D.C. Circuit alone, and that there was concern that future cases would be brought based on individual benefits determinations and regulations. And that was part of Congress's concern, and that is part of the basis upon which Congress amended the statute to read the way it does today.
How did it read before the amendment?
It used the term claims, and the D.C. Circuit had said, well, that would preclude judicial review if you're coming in and applying for benefits, but in instances where benefits were discontinued or benefits were forfeited for some reason, the court had held that you can come into court because that's not a claim for benefits. That's something that happens after you're already getting benefits. And Congress came in and said, no, we want no review. We don't want to involve the courts in the day-to-day workings of the VA. Now, would a decision that you could challenge regulations, even the validity of regulations under other statutes, interfere with the day-to-day workings of the VA? The answer to that is yes. Just one example is that the VA has a regulation on the ratings for disability of malaria. It's got four categories that rate the disability from 100% to 50% to 30% to 10%. The gradations depend on such things as whether there have been three relapses in a six-month period or two relapses in a six-month period. I suppose that someone could claim that current medical evidence makes that distinction inappropriate, that two serious relapses is more important than three not-so-serious relapses, and that he shouldn't be discriminated against because he happened to have two rather than three relapses of malaria. Well, under petitioner's theory, he would get into court. That's just one example. Asthma is another condition with four categories. High blood pressure has four categories. Ulcers have five. Epilepsy has six. And blindness has more than 100 different ratings categories in the regulations that depend upon the degree of impairment of vision. A suggestion that reviewing regulations would not inject the courts into the day-to-day workings of the VA has no basis in fact. Now, if the court concludes, despite the arguments I've made and those in our brief, that there is jurisdiction for these cases to proceed.
May I ask one question on that point, Mr. Gansfried? Do you agree with the view taken by then-Judge Scalia in the McKelvey case that the administrator necessarily decided in the benefit claims case that the regulation was consistent with the Rehab Act?
I didn't hear the middle
just
part of the
Judge Scalia's view in the McKelvey case. Do you agree with it?
I think that view as amplified in his opinion in the Gott case is Gott versus Walters, an earlier case that was the opinion was vacated upon granting of rehearing in bank, and then the case was settled. But the opinion is cited in some of the briefs, mentioned briefly in a quotation in our brief. That explanation is an appropriate one. There's also a procedural wrangle in this case as to whether the administrator or the BVA had decided the issue or hadn't decided the issue. And
would that view have implications for us in terms of our jurisdiction in other cases, do you think?
The question of whether a decision
necessarily encompasses other.
It would have enormous implications.
Yeah.
Let me say something about a case that, considering the subject matter of this case, is quite astonishing that the case has not been mentioned before, because this is not the first time that this court has been asked to consider the legal ramifications of alcoholism. In Powell versus Texas, the court refused to accept the blanket rule that alcoholics may not be asked to bear some degree of responsibility for their conduct, criminal responsibility in that case. And the court recognized that alcoholism is not merely status. It involves conduct, drinking, for which there may be an element of volition, at least at some point in the progression leading toward chronic alcoholism. Now, the Powell case is discussed in our brief several places, but it's not mentioned in petitioner's brief or reply brief or in any of the amicus submissions and hasn't been mentioned today. I've tried to explain that the VA policy is not a blanket disqualification of alcoholics from benefits. They get rehabilitation and treatment and medical services. If the they also get educational benefits if they apply within the 10 years. So there's some reasonable access to the package of benefits that we're talking about in this case. With respect to the language of willful misconduct, that is language that petitioners try to paint as deriving from prohibition. What's more important about that language is that it derives from the statutes that deal with veterans' benefits for disability compensation and pensions. And no one can seriously claim that a disability compensation, which amounts to $1,355 a month for a total disability, and that's not an income-sensitive amount, should be paid to someone whose sole disability is alcohol abuse or drug abuse. And I should mention that the VA has a regulation that treats drug abuse for the purposes of these programs in a similar way to the way it treats alcoholism. Because to take that position would be tantamount to paying that person for life to continue drinking or to take drugs and would discourage treatment or rehabilitation. And it is certainly an appropriate response for Congress to take to say that funds would be better spent on rehabilitation and treatment than on simply providing pensions and disability compensation. And I should add also that a claim along those lines has already been made. A claim for alcoholism disability has been made in the pension area and is pending in the Third Circuit and is mentioned in our briefs. Now, in 1977, Congress incorporated the willful misconduct language into the educational benefit program to assess who was entitled to this extension. And it took a term of art. It didn't make up some language. It took a term of art that had a particular meaning that had evolved in VA pension determinations over the course of years, a position that was first addressed in 1931, was reviewed again in 1964, and was reviewed again in 1972 when the present regulation was promulgated and sent out for notice and comment, and there was only one comment on this regulation when it was proposed in 1972. So the VA's position is not, as it's been suggested, woodenly fixed in the early days of the century. It has evolved in response to changing conditions as they were presented.
May I ask you this question? Supposing in 1978 the VA had said, we want to take another look at this regulation and allow an extension in this kind of situation, do you think the 1977 legislative history would have prevented them from doing
it? It would have made it awfully difficult, and the VA came to that conclusion because there's legislative history in 1979 and 1981 when members of the Senate committee that oversees the VA said, we really don't want you to apply this alcoholism standard in the educational benefits extension context. And the VA went up there and said, well, you may say that now, but in your committee report in 1977, you said that by using the term willful misconduct, we intend for the VA to apply that term as it's applied it in the other context, and specifically referenced this regulation and the provision from the manual. And the VA went back to Congress and said, if you may have something different in mind, but we concluded that we're bound by what you told us in 77.
You think
you told us you must do this.
You think they would have been bound by that 1977 history even if they read the 1978 legislation the way your opponent does?
I think the answer to that is still yes. It's a question for the administrator to take up in the first instance, because the 1978 legislation is more general and it doesn't repeal something that's more specific. If it requires a different result, then you do have to address whether it affected a repeal by implication.
Thank you, Mr. Ganstreet. Mr. Thiel, you have 3 minutes remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would just like to address a couple points. First, with respect to Mr. Ganstreet's astonishment of our failure to discuss Pell v. Texas, I also note this Court has the precedent in 1962 of Robinson v. California, which explicitly held it was improper to punish people for the status of being in that case, drug abusers. I think that...
I'll say it wouldn't apply the Robinson principle in the case of alcoholics?
No. What it said was the court there, I think, was concerned about extending the principle of you can't do something to somebody just because of their status to regulating conduct that went along with it. The express concern in that case, I think, was along the lines of criminal statutes in the states, for instance, regulating drunk driving. The court wanted to make clear it did not reach those kinds of things. But as respects, with respect to regulation based solely on somebody's status as an alcoholic, which is what we think this regulation does, we think Robinson is still controlling here. If that was in a criminal context, constitutional context, to the extent it has any relevance at all or that Powell does, we contend we're Robinson and we're not Powell. The Rehabilitation Act, as this Court noted in Arline, requires an individualized determination of each handicapped person's situation. That is, at essence, the problem with a regulation like this. This regulation is discriminatory. We believe it cannot stand. However, we contend that a decision our way here, the probable result of that decision would be to send these cases back to the Veterans Administration with a directive that you've got the law wrong. The law is alcoholism is a handicap. You can't discriminate solely on that basis. Now, you have a statute in 1977 that says the VA does have a right to decide whether a particular petitioner, particular veteran, engaged in willful misconduct. The effect of a decision for petitioners here is to send these cases back to the Veterans Administration for that willful misconduct determination. The statute, the delimiting date extension statute, would still have force. The VA just would be unable, on the basis of these petitioners' condition as alcoholics, to say that alone means you don't get your benefits. That is, at essence, what our case is here. The VA is ignoring the requirements of the Rehabilitation Act. They will continue to do so as long as this regulation stands. And therefore, we believe this regulation should be invalidated by the court. If there are no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Teel. The case is submitted.
The Honorable Court is now adjourned until tomorrow at 10 o'clock.